Welcome to Christ today. Heavenly Father, show us and guide us into a fuller, loving relationship with Jesus Christ, in whose name we pray, amen. What led up to the gangsters like Bonnie and Clyde and Machine Gun Kelly? I'll tell you what I think in a few minutes, but first I want to talk about some other things. Like, as we go through life, what happens? It's always a mix of excitement, and it is balanced with the appropriate measure of plain old normality. And we are just fine with normal when we want it. Otherwise, we like excitement. It's just a mix. We are just so human. And then here and now we have safety. And what happens when we have safety? We want some excitement. When we have excitement, we want safety. It's just so human. We find a balance. And if we don't have enough of one, we use our imagination. We read books or watch television, movies, or some form of electronic entertainment, and that gets us the mix that we need for our emotions and our intellect to engage with. Oh, we can pretend to live in all sorts of times with our the things that are before us. We can pretend we live in Roman times or in the American West or in the future. We each have an imagination and we each have a way to find just what we want. And then we get pulled right back into today, the reality of our present condition. Probably people throughout history have always been like this, but we have an advantage because we have so much history to look at and to learn from. Sometimes we learn those lessons, and sometimes we don't. Yep. Sometimes we have to relearn some historical lessons again and yet again. There's that old adage that goes something like, people who don't learn from the lessons of history are doomed to repeat that historical experience. So, as we live, we determine what applies to us and what does not apply to us. And we just keep going, keep living. We think about things and we figure out what applies to us and what doesn't. And these days, there are so many things that we can look at. See, I've always enjoyed history, and I look for patterns, and I see indicators of how things have gone and what is to come. Other people have done this also, and there's been an observation more and more people have, which is, watch out, something big is going to happen. And yet, really, only God knows what the future is. And he has a book that tells us about what will happen, but we don't know when things will happen. That's what we get to try and understand. But we do see the patterns. War events are always something big to look at, and they are also so often a surprise. I mean, you could look at 9/11, for instance. You can look at a car accident. That's recalibrates our thinking. There are surprises. And like I said, war events are always a surprise, I think. So many of us have looked for the patterns, and we see things as kind of converging at this point in history. At this time in history, we see lots of patterns that are coming together, and we are just wondering what will happen. It looks like something big, but yet only God really knows, and we get to just try to figure it out. I know that the war, the history of wars, is always interesting. It seems to define us. And 100 years ago, right about 100 years ago, we had that war to end all wars. And so many people were jubilant about the prospects of World War I. In every country that was involved in that conflict, the people believed that the boys, that is to say the soldiers that went away, would be back by Christmas, that it would be a short war, and their side would be victorious. That's what every side thought. Everybody thought that. But there were a few people who didn't. Typically, they were the aristocratic people in the countries involved, like Germany, like England, well, lots of aristocratic people. There was that so-called Lord Kitchener. He liked to call himself Lord anyway. What a title. And he had a grasp of the reality of war. He was a soldier. And he said that the war that we now called World War I would last at least 3 years and require millions of men to participate in it. Well, that was one side. That was the experienced person. And the other side of this was the regular civilians. And they thought differently because they believed what they were told. They believed that this was going to be a quick and easy victory at war, and that it would have hardly any effect on their life. That's what they thought. So they expected that, just like they always had, their travels around Europe would be just the way they wanted. They could work anywhere and eat anywhere with ease. They just thought life would continue. But as the war carried on and restrictions were put on the people, freedoms were limited, and things changed. History has shown us that war has a big effect on the people of a nation. Yeah. Do you remember what really started World War I for America? It was when the Germans torpedoed the ocean liner, that steamship, the Lusitania. Now, the Germans said that they were going to do it if the Lusitania was carrying war munitions or explosives that would have been used against the Germans in war. And they took out full-page advertisements in the big newspapers in London and New York and warned people not to get on the Lusitania because if it was carrying war materials, it would be considered a warship, which would then be subject to being bombed. So for many years, the governments denied that the Lusitania had carried any war materials. America denied it, England denied it. But then after many more years, the governments of Britain and America did admit that the Lusitania was, in fact, carrying war materials. So anyway, Just off the coast of England, the Lusitania was sunk by a German torpedo. And the shipping at that time didn't even, that ship, the Lusitania, did not even follow the maritime rules that had been engaged in, because every seagoing vessel leaving England had a military escort from England. But for some reason, the Lusitania did not. Even though the German government had took out those full-page advertising specifically warning that the Lusitania could maybe be attacked if it was carrying those military munitions. So, the Lusitania, it was a British ship, but it had 127 Americans on board, and 127 Americans, that is why America entered World War I, because Americans were killed by the Germans on that ship. It's pretty interesting how we learn history, but we don't. It's interesting that we learn part of the truth, but not the whole truth. In a way, who can blame the teachers that we learn history from? Because their history books only teach a part of history. And besides, to teach the real history might take a lot more time than they have allotted. So, they just don't. They can't. The textbooks don't say it, and there's only so much that they can add. Well, thinking of school time, it was a shock for me to find out that the history I learned in high school was not really accurate. So I went to college, and it was kind of the same thing. Afterwards, I found out that what they taught was not really accurate. And the more I read, the more I learned. Even those upper-level college courses that were required reading were, they had 8 or 15 books for each class. Even that wasn't all that I needed to understand. Sure, the teachers tried to teach, but I'm just glad that I continued to read and study after my formal schooling. And I learned that the right thing to do was not to pursue knowledge, but the right thing to do was to pursue truth. And there's always a question of what truth do you know, because there's always a little more information that you just don't quite have. So we are all surprised as we continue in life and try to search for the truth. After all, we don't want to be fooled. Nobody likes to be fooled. So we like to search for the truth. And another part of that is, you can just imagine how surprised I was years later when I finally read the Bible, and I realized that that was a true book. It was a true book of history and of relationships. Relationships with people and relationships with God. What a surprise that was, because in the academic field, the Bible is usually not promoted. So, it was a good book. I better get back to my main thoughts here. So, in history, we have surprises and we have wars. Most of the times, the war is a surprise to us. We just didn't think it would happen. But with hindsight, we can see the patterns. So, World War I was kind of a surprise, and it made, after World War I, there was some tough years for this country, and then there were years of prosperity. That was in the 1920s, and for some reason, the central bank, that is the Federal Reserve, which is a private institution, made money available in both cash and credit. It was made available all across the country. And you know what happened? Society flourished with its prosperity. And then what happened? It couldn't be sustained. There was the crash of 1929 and the Great Depression of the 1930s. And some financial people today are asking, is there a parallel between the 1920s and today? So, yes, there are some parallels, and of course they're not perfect. We have had wars, like we had the Gulf War, we had 9/11, and then we went into Iraq, and then we went into, and still are in, Afghanistan. Afghanistan is the longest war in our nation's history, and we are still there. I wonder why. Well, I've talked about that before. But back to the financial part of this and the state of society. The parallels here are not perfect, but there is a similarity. And there's a few people, financial people, who are asking, could a market crash and a depression be coming? Something like in the 1929 crash and the 1930s depression. Well, if you look, you can find a parallel, and you can see that the easy cash and the easy credit of the 1920s led to a certain prosperity that could not last. And some people are saying that is the state that we are in today. That our United States supply of dollars in the last 10 years has increased by at least 4 times since 2008. So, sure, easy money makes a difference, but it always has to be balanced out again. And so a lot of people are saying that there's going to be a correction in the stock market, and it's a correction back to real value. Like I said, that's what some people say, and other people say, oh no, it's going to continue because Trump is our president. Well, we will see what we see. There's not a true pattern of what will happen. They're simply suggested patterns, and we do our best to try to understand what other people are looking at. What do the financial people say? I think it's only reasonable to see what reasonable people are considering. I know the 1929 style crash and the 1930s style depression is a question. Lots of people, financial people, are looking at that possibility, and I've talked about that before. So, then there's other people who say that our country, it does not have financial concerns, and that, I'm sorry, it does not have just financial concerns, and that there are other concerns that our nation has. There are political concerns, there are moral concerns, there are spiritual and cultural concerns. And all these combined make a reason for us to be concerned about where our nation is headed. Are we going to have a potential conflict? Maybe, because after all, our nation is being divided right now. There's so many people that hold opposite ideas. And there's that saying that a kingdom divided against itself cannot stand. So is that what's going on? It just might be. And there's another word to remember here, and that is the borrower is servant to the lender. And our country has borrowed so much money. So, do these days reflect the 1920s and 1930s? Kind of yes, kind of no. In the 1920s, there was hardship for some and prosperity for others. I guess you could say that about the 1930s too. Well, In the 1920s, it seemed like so many people took out loans and they accepted easy cash. And the crash of 1929 occurred, and hardly anybody could repay their loans. People ran out of cash, and then the banks ran out of cash. And when the banks ran out of the currency, they ended up calling their loans in, all the loans that they could call in. And in those days, loans were always short term. But it was so normal for the loans to be renewed that everybody always thought their loan would be renewed, because it always had happened before. Well, when the banks had a shortage of cash, they did not renew all of those short-term loans. Instead, they demanded that the loans would be repaid. But the people did not have the cash to repay those loans back. So what happened? The banks repossessed the properties all over the place. They repossessed property that was secured by those little loans. And this became a nationwide problem. Everywhere it was a problem, nobody, very few people, could pay those loans back to the banks. So what happened? Properties everywhere were foreclosed on. They were repossessed by the banks. For a while, in the state of Oklahoma alone, there were 200 farms that were foreclosed on each week. That's Oklahoma alone. 200 farms per week were foreclosed on. That's just amazing to me. So those foreclosures were going on all across the nation. People were in a hard way in the United States in the 1930s. And you can imagine that there was great dissatisfaction, great unhappiness with the banks and with the government, because that's who the people blamed, the banks and the government. There was distress everywhere. There was impoverished people, hungry people everywhere, people who had lost everything of value that they owned. That happened in the 1930s. It seemed like everyone was broke, or they were afraid that they would soon go broke. There were people who did just fine during the Depression. They had their jobs and they kept their jobs, and they did just fine. But there was always a fear that they could be out of work without notice, and then they would be impoverished just like everyone else. At that time, like I said, everyone was in a way, they were broke, and the federal government was no different. They were broke also. They were so broke that they either could not or would not pay the World War I veterans the bonus that they had promised them until 1945. So that was more than 25 years later. That was the new plan. So what happened? People were desperate. The veterans were desperate. And there was a march on Washington, D.C. Between 20,000 and 40,000 World War I veterans marched on Washington, D.C. to protest. And what happened when they got there was they did protest, they did march, and they were ordered to disband. Some of them did disband, but plenty of them didn't, and the police were ordered to shoot into the crowd, and they did. They shot their revolvers into the crowd, and veterans were wounded. Two veterans died from that incident. So I just bring this up to illustrate that all sorts of surprises can happen. Nobody would have thought that would have happened, but it did. In the midst of poverty and desperation, that's what there was in the United States at the time, poverty and desperation. And people were just trying to get along. They wanted their World War I benefits. So that's what happened in the 1930s. I think that was 1933. Well, anyway, there were lots of people who did have those good times and lots of people who had the hard times in the 1920s and the 1930s. It was just a time where all sorts of things went on. But don't underestimate how serious conditions were for some. It has been estimated that there were 7 million people who died from hunger in the 1930s depression. 7 million people died from hunger right here in the United States. Unimaginable, isn't it? So, as these conditions went on, people were desperate. And that happened among every sort of people in the United States. Like I said, people were scared. They were scared for their family. They were scared for well, when they saw people going broke, people in their family, people who lived next door to them, they were very concerned when they saw their homes, their money had been lost. Everything of value. This was another thing. Their savings accounts, which had been deposited into those banks, their savings accounts were, they were gone. They were lost and gone when that bank went out of business. They went bankrupt. The banks did. And people lost all their savings. So there was a widespread feeling. Most of the population did not like the banks. They did not like the government. And so when the 1930s brought out people who robbed banks, they were gangsters. And when they came along, much of the population did not mind that those terrible banks got robbed, because those banks had robbed so many people. So they didn't mind that the banks might go out of business or might get robbed. Anyway, Hollywood knew that this was a theme in the people's hearts. And what did they do? They took advantage of the trend and they made movies about gangsters and bank robbers. And those movies were pretty popular because people could identify with those situations. So, in a way, those bank robbers and robbers, they were seen as generous by the ordinary person, because on occasion one of those robbers would be kind of like a Robin Hood and give away the money they stole. So that added to their popularity. Well, anyway, in those days, everybody knew the names of those bank robbers and gangsters. They knew the names of John Dillinger, Bonnie and Clyde, Machine Gun Kelly, Babyface Nelson, and others. Yep, they followed those people. And sometimes it happened that when those people were killed, there would be an open casket viewing of the bodies. And sometimes there would be really long lines of people just walking right by the body just to get a view of it. They were popular people. Sometimes it would be a two-day event, and the people would just walk by for a glimpse at that famous person in the casket, dead. The newspapers would also write about what had happened. There were long articles about every aspect of that person's life, that robber, who got shot, how it happened. All these details were in those newspaper articles, and more too, their past lives. They were popular people, the robbers were. And the cops, they were the good guys, and sometimes they were popular too, but they just did not have the same mystique as the robbers. So it was during that time that there was a newly formed law enforcement branch called the FBI. They were active and had national authority. And they could cross state lines in pursuit of felons when pretty much the local police had to stop at the state lines because that's where their authority stopped. So it's changed today. Now, if there is a pursuit that is called a hot pursuit, the law enforcement can continue the pursuit of that felon wherever that pursuit takes them. But at that time, it was a different day. And there were different police agencies, and there was the FBI that was given broad authorities across the United States. They, like any new organization, they made some mistakes in their procedures and their tactics and their communications. That was the 1930s, but they learned fast. And soon enough, under J. Edgar Hoover's influence, the FBI became an efficient law enforcement agency. They use all the technology that they can, and technology has come a long way since that day. You remember, maybe you do, Dick Tracy, and he had that wristwatch that was a communication device. Well, we have those now. Yep, things have changed. Technology has changed for both the criminal and the cop. So, but back to the 1930s. In the 1930s, those bank robbers, those gangsters, sometimes stole huge amounts of cash. It was like $10,000, $20,000 or more. Just an amazing amount of cash. And what a change between then and today. Today it seems like the banks sometimes don't have any cash to speak of. Sometimes they don't. I learned that lesson about 5 years ago. I needed to get $3,500 in cash. And I went to the bank, and they didn't want to give it to me. They said they would have to order the cash for me, and that would take about 10 days. I kept talking, and eventually a teller said, oh, she had just received a cash deposit that day, and she had that much cash and could help me. So I complained to the manager and said that a hardware store had plenty of hardware, and a bank should have plenty of cash. It didn't make a difference. But anyway, it was an interesting experience to find out how things work. Since then, I've found out that the banks have a whole lot of difference between them. Some banks really don't have any cash to speak of, almost none on hand. And others do. I don't know the difference. But I know that it really is true that some banks don't keep any cash to speak of on hand. It seems like there is a war on cash. And that's just the way it is. That's the way it is in other countries, and I guess it's coming to our country as well. You know that in November last, India did eliminate its what they called high denomination bills. Or banknotes. And what did they call a high denomination banknote? Well, it was equivalent to those banknotes that had a value of $20. Ha! Can you imagine? So what happened? They eliminated all those banknotes. So they still do have banknotes, it's just that the ones that they have are approximately equivalent to our $1 bills, $5 bills, and $10 bills. They have just eliminated all the larger, so-called larger denomination banknotes from India. Oh, what a situation. So, yes, the world has a war on cash. Could it happen here? I think it could. I think there are people who want to see it. And when that happens, all the money will have to go through a bank account, and it will be trackable and taxable. Maybe that's what those people want. Don't know. I don't know. But we can see that it is a worldwide trend. Here in the United States, there have been lawmakers who wanted to eliminate the $100 bill. And that has happened several times in the last 20 years. But the proposals do not make it out of committee. Yet, it is a proposal that has happened several times. I have the sense that somebody wants to lead us down a path where we can be contained and controlled. I just wonder. Currency is a part of what our control method is. It's kind of hard to discover information that is not readily available, but you can look at the indicators and you can get an idea of what we hear and what is reasonable in their minds and what just might happen. So it's an interesting thing to try to figure out what the situation really is, because there is so much deception everywhere. It is challenging to discern the truth from the propaganda that is around us. Sometimes we see that people speak because they want to inflate their own ego and be important, so they speak in a way that is not accurate. Somehow, we just have to discern it. There are lots of people like that. And I hope that you are in constant prayer with the God of the Bible. With your prayer, you can ask God to give you His righteous discernment, the proper discernment. Yes, about truth and deception, but also about money matters. In life, there are lots of forces trying to influence us. You know some of their names and some of the institutions or corporations, like the Federal Reserve or other central banks around the world, or the United Nations World Bank, or their International Monetary Fund. And then there are investors like George Soros, or investment houses like Morgan Stanley, J.P. Morgan, or Blackstone, or Vanguard Mutual Funds. There are families like the Rockefellers or the Rothschilds. They all have something in common. They want to use or borrow some of your wealth so that they can gain more influence in the financial world and in all the various places of power and control and influence in the world. In all areas, there is that struggle for power. Often, it involves money. Oh, in the 1770s, Mayor Amstel Rothschild said, "Let me control a nation's money, and I care not who makes the laws." Oh, before that, there were the Roman Caesars. They also understood about the control of money and precious metals, which allowed them power and influence. And before that, from the ancient days of human history, right up until today, money and food are the same fundamentals at work. For example, let's look at Genesis chapter 47, verses 15, 17, and 19. I'm going to combine them to make a point. It talks about when money failed in Egypt, Joseph gave people 1 year of food in exchange for their cattle. Next, Joseph gave the people, it was inferred, that same 1 year of bread, food, in exchange for their land. And after that, Joseph gave the people in exchange, he gave the people bread in exchange for the people becoming the slaves of Pharaoh. Yeah, see, Joseph was acting on behalf of Pharaoh for all this. But the important point of this is to recognize both the importance of and the fallibility of money. Oh, and that we want to keep our money and everything that we own. And that includes our food and water and how to acquire it, maybe farm it. So along with this, let us reexamine what most of our values are or might be. And that has to do with family, God, and community. But let's also give some serious consideration to those other essential parts of life, which are, of course, sustaining ourselves, water, food, warmth. And beyond this, I'm sure that your list of supplies or things will simply grow and grow. And on a personal level, these things are important, and we can do something about them. Now, on a national level, there is not much we can do to change our nation's situation with debt and supplies and things of this, the structure of it. Nationally, the more debt our nation has, the less choice our country has to determine what its future outcome will be. Now, I mention that financially powerful people and families, for a long time now, also in 2017, these things have been stated. Jacob Rothschild of France, he manages a Rothschild investment company, and he told all of the investors in that company that the economic health of the United States was unsustainable because of the sovereign national debt, and that investors should take their investments out of the United States. So we can see the indicators. The indicators of the economic situations in our future. Well, it just is something we should all be aware of and try to consider how to protect ourselves. From my point of view, I look at this and I see that anything could happen. Certainly a crash could happen. It could happen in 5 weeks or 5 years. I don't know when, but I just see the momentum of the forces that are going towards that, and I can't see how we can correct it. We don't have the willpower to stop spending. We don't have the political willpower. We don't have the personal willpower. And it just looks like a very serious situation is going to come upon us in a big surprise. So that's one factor. Money, of course, there's the other factor of spiritualness, being spiritual, being in touch with God, what he says. And he tells us how to live. He tells us don't be a borrower, basically he does. And he tells us to live holy. Are we living holy in this country? Well, it's another reason that just maybe we will have something big and bad happen in our nation. These are lots of questions that have lots of answers, and it's not easy for us to figure it out. The only thing is we do keep looking, and we do seek to understand. We seek to use our thoughts and our concerns to try to understand. And of course, to me, that means to have preparedness. I think of preparedness a lot, because that seems to be my direction these days as I talk to people. And remember that with preparedness, you don't have to be one of those great big preppers that you hear about. You just have to start. Everybody starts somewhere. And then we build on what we have. And I like basic things. There's a lot of people who really jump into advanced states of this, but I just like the basic things, and especially I like food and water, like a water purifier. Anyway, there's always things to get. I like the simple And I like the little additions of food, like dehydrated peas and dehydrated carrots. When that's all you have to add to your rice with salt and pepper, you know what? When you're really hungry, all sorts of things taste good. So I think about getting prepared. And I think about other things we need too. Like, do we want a solar-powered radio or a crank radio? Those are good. Those are good. As long as your radio station is close, they seem to work just fine. But in my experience, I have found that a solar or a crank radio, they don't have a good quality of reception. No, to receive a station, you have to be really close to it with those kinds of radios. And if you want a good radio, you have to get a battery-powered radio. That just seems to be the way it is. So, it's a question. We all get to figure these things out. And it's especially a concern if our electrical supply has a big problem. Speaking of battery radios and battery-powered things, we always have to be concerned about the batteries being left in any device, in any flashlight, in any radio, in anything. If you're using something daily or weekly, it's going to be just fine. But what seems to have happened to the batteries is if you leave the batteries in any device, and if that device accidentally gets switched on, well, there's a very good chance that those batteries will corrode your device. So, just consider that. You just remember, batteries, if they're left in the device, chances are they're going to cause corrosion, either because they do over time or because something or somebody leaves that device on and the batteries will become drained and then they corrode almost always. So pay attention to what you have. Don't neglect the things that you would use, like a flashlight or a radio. Those are important. Don't let it get turned on accidentally or for somebody to come along and turn it on and leave it on. Yeah. So think of those things, because people do, in these kind of an emergency situations, electricity is lost. Sometimes for weeks, sometimes longer. And just think about what you would do if you ever had to deal with such a situation. It's not all bad. Just think, we might even get to know our neighbors and talk to them regularly. Wow, that would be great. Getting into fellowship with people. Wow, even if we don't like them, they're still people and they still deserve an element of respect. That's what I think. So, to me, that is a reflection of the second great commandment, to love your neighbor as yourself. Ha! What a thought. Oh, and I'm going to tell a story. And I've told this before on Christ Today, but it just seems to fit in right here. There was a time in my life when my wife and I were not getting along so well. And I would go to visit my mother, and she could tell that something was going on. And one day, when I was visiting my mother, she said, "John, what is the great commandment?" And I said, "To love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind." And then she asked, "And what is the second great commandment?" And I said, "To love thy neighbor as thyself." And next she asked, "And who is your nearest neighbor?" So I thought to myself, who lived next door? And I suppose she could tell my thought, where it was going. And then she blurted out, "Your wife!" Oh, boy. And right away, I knew that she was right. She led me down that certain path to have a right relationship with your neighbor, who is your spouse. That's your closest neighbor. What an interesting thought was that. And I realized I had some work to do. I had to make things right. That was a big lesson, and I still laugh at this. Funny. It's been years, but I still laugh. So I think about all the stories that we have. All throughout life, we have things that happen to us. We have cares, we have concerns, and we do want to think about getting along with our neighbor on a long-term basis. We can always repair those fences, always, no matter what has happened. There's always something we can do to help improve that relationship. And I think that's important. If we consider it, if we think about it, another part of that is you want to reach people with understanding who Jesus is. Because we don't want anybody to go to hell. When you think of how serious hell is, no, you don't want anybody to go there. It's just too awful. I think of St. Francis of Assisi, and he said, "Share the gospel of Jesus with others, and if necessary, use words." Well, I don't exactly agree with that, but I recognize he has a really good point that how we relate to people is we relate through actions. And it's just a matter of considering this and understanding it. But there's a lot of life that we have to just think about. A lot of things and a lot of concerns, and it goes from the neighborliness to the money thing. And I know I listened to Ron Paul the other day. He's a retired congressman, and he was talking about money. Now, I like him. I don't follow him, but I am sympathetic to his point of view. And a couple of days ago, he was speaking, and he said, "This country is bankrupt, and Washington, D.C., is fighting over controlling the country at the time of its collapse." Ron Paul said the collapse began 10 years ago, at the time of the 2008 financial crises. Those problems showed themselves, but the problems were never solved. So their consequences and momentum simply continued through today. One notable problem is the artificially low interest rates. And this means that the normal return on a standard investment cannot be realized. So our social benefits, like pensions and such as that, they will not earn enough money as a standard return to pay for our promised benefits. And we need the benefits to be paid. And if they are to be reduced, well, it will be difficult. And that's not the only problem our nation has. The other problem is our national debt. We do have to pay the creditors, right? Well, in the past, when other countries of the world have had trouble paying their principal and interest on their national debt, an international body would step in, like the United Nations, World Bank, or International Monetary Fund, or the Bank of International Settlements. So they would step in and force another country to make payments. Sometimes they would tax the nation's retirement and investment accounts, like by 20% or maybe more. Or another thing they would do is force the country to impose taxes on water and electricity. And those taxes of like 20 or 30% would go to pay that country's national debt. See, these things have happened in other countries in the last 20 years. But we in the United States, we didn't pay much attention to it because they were getting taxed and not us. But unusual things have been happening in our financial circumstances in this country, some for better and some for worse. And now I'm hearing a surprising number of big-time financial people that are saying that any time now, or in 2019, the United States economy is going to have great difficulties like we have never seen. So I think about those things, and that's why I'm going to have a personal preparedness presentation for natural disasters. It's a free event, and I hope you can come by. It's going to be Saturday, October 20th, 2018. The doors open at 5:30, and the event will be from 6 to 8 p.m. It will be at the Paradise Performing Arts Center. It's a great place. Lots of seats. So it's located at 777 Nunley Road in Paradise. So if you're coming from Paradise, you will know where it is. And if you're coming from Chico, just come up the hill, go up Skyway to Paradise, and turn a right on Pearson, go about a mile, turn left on Clark. In about a tenth of a mile, you turn left again on Nunley, and it will be on your right. The Paradise Performing Arts Center. This event is sponsored by the Paradise Business and Professional Alliance, and also by Preparedness Thoughts on KKXX Radio. So there's a lot of caring about people. We care about people. We care about our neighbors. And we care about our community. So I think as a part of this caring, we talk about the things that we can be concerned about, what will help us in a time of difficulty. I say take a few steps. Everyone can take a few small steps towards the just-in-case. That just-in-case can be a forest fire or a house fire. Things just happen. Surprises happen. Small things happen. We can get a cut. We can get a snowstorm. We can get the electricity going out. We can get an electromagnetic pulse. We had that threat earlier in the year. So, oh yeah, and just a few days ago we had that emergency alert. It was a presidential alert. And what's going on with that? I don't know, but I wonder why they had to alert every single cell phone in the country. Does it mean something? It might. We don't know. But consider the possibilities, and if there's a little chance that something could go wrong, then put a little bit of your time and effort into fixing the problem that there could be. If there's a big seriousness to what could happen, then put a lot of your energy into it. Now, look at the possibilities and make a rational decision. You have to do it yourself. But perhaps you can come to that Paradise Performing Arts Center. It's at 777 Nunley Road in Paradise. The doors open at 5:30 for the 6 to 8 p.m. event on Saturday. So, there will be a question and answer time also. If you have questions, it helps me if you would write them down and send them to me, because I can put them into an order, then a sensible order. So, John Stephenson, P.O. Box 7222, Chico, California, 95927, or www.prepareforgod@usa.com. That's all lowercase and no spaces. I hope to see you October 20th at 5:30 or 6 or so. So we'll have some free items, and it should be a good time. So thank you for listening today, and until next week, may you walk with God, and may God walk with you.